What kind of activities did you help do with
them? Our house was a center of all the activity. We had all the committee meetings in the house. Even when we in the Verre colony, when all the meetings were in the school buildings and in the Kropotkin library, but there was still the committee meetings were in my house, and the people that came from the city that had to be put up, a lot of other people also did, but my house was always full. If I had to put up 30 people, there were plenty of mattresses on the floors and all the rooms, and there was always all the activities. So in the summertime, I had a big garden and canned all the vegetables and fruits. And I would put up a dinner for 30, 40 people in no time, because I will take up from the basement all the fresh canned stuff, and it takes no time. And so there was no such thing as not being active in the movement. It was not separated. At one time, we had a neighbor. As a matter of fact, this neighbor that I talked about, there was a man in the colony that did not mix well. He was very secretive. He was doing some mail ordering work, and he was always knocking with a little thing. And he really didn't share very much his personal life. So somebody expressed an opinion, I don't trust him. I don't know where he comes from, what he's doing, and that kind of spread. And because of all the Road to Freedom work and everything that's going on in our house, this neighbor was critical. He says, you have this man in your house all the time. How do you know he's not a spy? How do you know? So, because the house is full, and then it came out that it was just a stupid thing, you know. But it came out that way. It cleared itself up because it was just a foolish thing. But this thing, because our house was full of activity, and my husband was an initiator. He was full of executive. He was the executive type, and full of ideas, initial ideas. And you know, when you bring up an idea, you have to volunteer to do it. They say, who's going to do it? Well, I'm ready to do it. And you see, that's the way it is. And that's the way it is all his life in the farm, the same thing in the colony. He was there you had to have a labor manager, because so many different fields where the work was needed. And at the time, when everybody was complaining different times, they can't get people to do this work or that work. But with him, if he had an extra job, like for instance the army worm would attack the grain, and it's called army because they march like armies, and they in one night they eat up the whole crop. So he would come in the supper time in the dining room where we all meet for supper, and he would say, we have to fight, we have to 4 o'clock in the morning, we have to fight the arm in this and this field, the arm worms. I'm going out, who's going with me? And he would have volunteers to go. The same voice that would doubt us for complaining, they don't want to go. Because the other labor managers would say, you go there and go there, and he would go back to sleep. So that's the way he worked. And the same people, they would go, because he was very easy, he would knock at that door to wake them up, knock in the window, and they were all there, chariots. But, and he also was not lazy, you didn't expect a woman to have food or something. He would go in the kitchen and start himself, and he was capable that way. Anything that he wanted to do, he would start from himself. And he had these accomplishments, that kind of a type. So our house was always, the activity was in the house. And as far as teaching the children the labor movement, they learned everything in their own house.
Did the people live in the colony and then go elsewhere to work?
In the Verre colony, sure.
Yeah.
My husband used to go to Newark to work, commuter. And in order to make the commute, the train was a mile and a half from the colony. So we had to depend on a bus driver, called it a jitney. And when he didn't give the good service, he went in and organized a cooperative bus. Then we had a grocery man that didn't give good service, he had favoritism. Those he liked, he would give them service. Those he didn't like, he didn't. He organized a cooperative grocery. And he really organized this full cooperative in the Frey colony.
Why did you leave the colony to go to the Sunrise Farm?
The Sunrise Farm was a place. And don't forget, the Sunrise Farm was started in the Great Depression, mm-hmm. in 1929, when everybody was out of work. But that was not all. Our children were getting bigger, and you had to think of them going out to work, too. But this was an ideal, a cooperative farm to get to for your ideas, where you don't have to go out to work in the city. And this was a rare thing that you were able to go out and get a farm like that. Because of the Depression years, you got it for very little money. And so Joseph Cohn, who was the organizer of that, went on a lecture tour and got people to join it. The only thing, he got a partner who was not the proper man for such a thing, that went out with him, and he misrepresented some. He told people, well, you $500 a membership, you won't have to work or do anything. You'll be covered for everything, you know, which wasn't so. $500 gave you a manager that should come in and work the farm so you should earn your living. And we did it together as a communal thing, because this was an industrial farm with all the machinery, with a distillery house to distill the peppermint that we raised into oil. And there was everything there. Belgian horses that were race horses, cows, sheep, 10,000, 12,000 sheep. And there was a tremendous opportunity.
Where was the farm?
In Michigan.
And how many people lived on it?
Well, we had 500 members, families, but I guess about half of the families came out. We couldn't all go out at the same time. You had to go out. It was a farm that has worked with the labor. Mexicans or Puerto Ricans, so they had the accommodations that they had was not fit for the families to live. So the way it happened, the first 50 people that went out, and because my husband was an electrician and a plumber, he went out to help get the plumbing and things like that. He went out first. He took two of the children, went out there, and then he came back to take me out to look it over and to make the decision to move out there.
You were there when it was first started.
Yeah.
I see. So your husband was initial in founding the farm itself?
We joined it after it was already started, but he came out to help put in some of the plumbing and this kind of stuff. But then after he was there for a while with two children, and I remained with two children in the Ferrer colony. And then he came back and he took us out for a visit, and then we decided to move there. But mainly because this was a time when what will the children do? Go out to the city to work? So this is the reason. It was like a continuation of what we were doing in Shelton.
Was the Sunrise Farm anarchist?
Yes.
They
It was started as an anarchist colony. And of course we had all kinds of people there. And we had some Yiddishies who were fighting for everything should go on in the Yiddish language, things like that. But it was not the idea. The idea was an anarchist colony. Joseph Cohn was thinking for many years about it. And in order to get it started, this was an opportunity. So there's a lot to say about that, the way it developed. But it was my family had a school of life, and we learned a great deal there in applying the ideals in life. So everything that I stand for, I tested. And I can speak with authority what works and what doesn't work.
What were the differences between the two?
Between the two, this was an industrial farm where you could work together as a commune, and from each according to his ability, to each according to his needs. And the skeleton was just around the school. You had to go to work to the city, and you had to have the school for the. You worked for the school to the children. It was a small thing, small community. We developed a cooperative grocery store and a cooperative bus to take us to work, and a cooperative school, but that's about all. But you had to, the Ferrer colony was an industrial farm, had a future to be leave there completely, your whole family, to work and live your life there.
Was the school at the Sunrise Farm run in the same philosophical way?
That's what I was telling you. Now, the school, and then this couple was running the school, she was, especially the woman, she was older than her husband, and she had the credentials, and she knew nothing of how to treat children. She absolutely was unfit. She learned to teach 3 hours. But absolutely unfit to help children grow. So the house was like a dungeon for the children. If a child ate some prunes, he was stealing. Things like that, you know. So when I came in, it was the principles that I brought in, and I had of course the support of the people. Now, Joseph Cohn was also one of the organizers of the Ferrer Colony. And he was all on what I was doing there. And then there was another man from the labor movement, Faber. He was a good speaker. And he was very well versed in the philosophy of the modern school. And when I got into the school, after being there a month or two, I called a parents' meeting to explain what I was doing. I asked him to first give the lecture on the philosophy of my idea in the school. And then I showed and explained what the children did, what they made, and why I'm doing, you know, to get the philosophy with the results. Now, when the parents saw the difference between what it was before, and this couple were in charge, and what I brought in, of course they saw little mats and they saw little things, and the children, for instance, they were complaining about the food. When I came in, the first thing that I started, before I did anything else, I didn't know where to start. It was a very neglected house, didn't know what to start with. So I called a meeting of the children, and we got organized. I made a chairman, we elected a chairman, and somebody to take care of, to see that the water stove should always be going, and then on the menu, I explained to them, this man that was living there, Grossner, Alice Grossner, he used to take the whole wheat, and cook it. That takes cooking overnight, and the children didn't know why they can't have the farina, which has no nourishment, and why they can't have white bread. So I explained to them these things and got a vote that we were having cereal and toast. So when we have the whole wheat cereal, they can have a piece of white toast. When we have other cereals, we never had white cereals. But it was their decision. Why we have to have whole wheat products? Why we have to have salads? And when the children took a vote on that, then there was no more complaints. The parents would complain that they're not getting the right food. The children are not getting the right food. But when the children took a vote on what they should have, it's something else. Now, because I'm a vegetarian, and there were two cooks that would come in. One would come in for breakfast, and one would come in for the for breakfast and lunch. Was breakfast I served with the children, but lunch, and one would come in for the supper meal. And one woman there, she was a good cook, and she was always bribing the children. Eating in it. Some children didn't like fish. So she said that Dora wants you to eat the fish. So the children were wiser than she. And they came to ask her. They knew that she was lying. I wouldn't say that they must eat the fish. But anyway, the children ate, they voted for things. And the surprising thing is that the parents were complaining they get too much salad before I came in. I forget. I don't obstruct it with my hand. The parents were always complaining that the children don't get the right food, but that there was no complaints when the children voted for what they want to eat. And this is the way. Then I organized three children, two older ones and one little one, because I had 4-year-olds, to clear the tables. Three always taking in money to set the tables and things like that. And the meal that, if sometimes a woman was short for lunch, and I would make the lunch after the whole morning and all that, if a woman wouldn't come, I had the committee of the children to help. And in that way, it was all well organized, and it was a vote from the children. Now, there was one 12-year-old boy that went through all these public school, as I told you, was the same age as my boy, and he was big for his age, and he was very lazy and irresponsible. So when it was we needed a committee to take care of the coal stove in the basement that gives the hot water all day, he raised his hands. The children voted against him. Why? Because if Marvin is going to take out the stove, burn up the house, he's irresponsible. So he was voted down once or twice, and he was very anxious, and he had a good reaction. Then I said, it is not right not to give him a chance. How about you guys taking on a committee with him? Well, this solved the problem. Marvin was never irresponsible. If he overlooked and the stove went out, he quickly made a new fire, and the fire was going all the time. This is the incidents like that. Then there were a couple of children. You just loved them. You wanted to. You wouldn't hug them all the time. There were a couple of little sister and a brother, and they were 10, 11, or between 10 and 12 years old. And these children did a lot of mischief. They stole things, and they did all kind of mischief. So what I did, I went to the parents to get some cooperation, and I found that all the missing things in the hotel were stolen from by them. Well, I stopped going to the parents, but I started to, on my own, to take the children. And before, when anybody was caught stealing something, it was punishment. This couple, you know, this woman was a tyrant. The punishment and the showing up and all that. And with me, it was just embracing the child. And now how would you like if somebody would do it? For instance, they were very creative children, and the children were making beads or working on the looms, and somebody would cut the threads. And I made sure to know who did it. And but I did not go directly at the child. I took them in and showed by example, supposing somebody would do to yours. And what do you think? And I got around these children and they stopped doing it. Mm-hmm. Not by being harsh to them. They needed more love than the other children. The other children had enough. These didn't. So, I mean, I can go on and on and on in telling you such experiences. So it was not, it was not done in the school when the others were there. It was done in the school when I was there. Mm-hmm. And there was one young woman there. She was blind. I knew her from childhood from the Ferrer colony. But she insisted on helping in the kitchen. She would take a piece of pudding instead of putting the plate, putting it on the floor. Well, I went around her in such a way that she would do it and I would still protect the food and the children should not notice. I mean, there were many, many things that had to be done. And the parents were much more approving of me than they did of the others because the children really had a better time. Now, also I was conscious because in my own life I was like that. I'd raise a garden and whatever I had in the garden, I wouldn't go to buy. And in the farm, the first years that when I was there in charge of the house, when the first group had to come in, we had just about 50 people came in. Somebody started a garden, and they started the potatoes and onions and carrots and cabbage because we were moving in at the middle of the summer or something like that. Also, so that too, so the kitchen and the school were buying things now. Then we had a good crop of tomatoes we had. Now, when we have tomato juice, we can do without oranges. But if we want to give the children a change, so we buy some. And so I utilized everything. I made jam out of tomatoes. Next time I'll give you some of the tomato juice to taste. I made people conscious what can be done. They invited me in the dining room before I was in charge of the children's to make a vegetarian meal. Mm-hmm. And the butcher was standing and working there. He asked me to save some for him. Well, what did I do? They were cutting up celery. Oh, yes, that's also, we had celery in the garden. And they were cutting off the green stuff and throwing it out. I said to the kitchen crew that was doing it, save it for me. And what I did, I made a meal out of the celery tops. Mm-hmm. And all the things that like that, I did it in the children's house too. That kind of a thing. And I started, then I made a garden with the children. And they could work it or make their own or work in a group, two or three. They grouped themselves in their little plots. And we started using the vegetables from their garden. And many meals were that way controlled. Like if a little boy was mischievous, was pulling out flowers, I got him to plant some of his own. He was sitting all day there and watching. I planted with him papilaki. When he put in the papilaki, they come up only to the sun and then they close. He used to sit there all morning and wait for the papilaki to open.
Would you say again that things between the men and women were the same as they were at the
Fred
colony?
It was more of a general public, and also the youth, the young people that were coming in, were some members, and some we used to get the students from the colleges for the summer that came out. I couldn't tell very much about that, but it was established families mostly that came out. Now, as far as I said, even today, if women get any rights and they do not use them, that becomes something. See, working for rights and jobs is one thing. Working for rights in your own independence, in your own life, that's your individual doing. So there were all kinds. There were women that were flirting with other men. And there were men that were faithful and unfaithful. I don't know what the word means anyway, but they came from the cities, was a general public. And the beauty of this is that a general public can come into a community, into a commune, and on the same basis and work, especially, I emphasize this, from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. Now, there were some people, like my family, for instance, my husband and I and my two girls and my two boys, even small ones, were very productive because they had a background of being productive. We were all able. Each and one of my children was earning because they learned how to be productive. There were some families that could not, husband and wife, could not support their children on the outside the way they were taken care of in the community, because their work was not earning enough, and the care that their children got, and every one of the members got $10 a month when we had enough money to give for expenses. They got it whether they earned it or not, because together we earned it. Now the children, when I had my own two in the house, to prepare for school, and then I had 40 to prepare for school. I was happier the same time I prepared 40 that I prepared two. So you see, there is no question that there is a big difference in the life.
Did the men and the women do the same jobs?
If they were able to, sure. Now some women knew. Not many, but those were able to rent the tractors. Mm-hmm. My 12-year-old boy ran a tractor, and the big fellow, maybe 25-year-old, a big husky guy, a six-footer, was not able to run the tractor. He was irresponsible, and he couldn't keep the tractor running, and my 12-year-old did.
So some women would run tractors and some men would cook or something?
I know of one. And that's Rachel Lippmann, but I don't know of anybody else. She drives the station wagon. Her husband didn't even take license. She likes to drive, and he doesn't. She's a very sick woman. It's cancer, but she's under control. She's occasionally, falls down. But she still drives from San Francisco, from Palo Alto, to Los Angeles, because she's good with that and likes it. Whether there were others or not, I don't know. But everybody could. That was fit. Now, see now where was
the jobs in the
the jobs were in the field. Everybody was working in the field. Now, those that were able, there were teamsters using the horse and wagons, and there were the field workers were throwing the corn, whatever we were picking. And then there was the sugar beets that had to be harvested. I think that was mostly men. I don't know. I was never working on that. But everybody worked in the field, and then there were women that were taking turns in the kitchen. Now, every woman that was used to cook for her own family, this was cooking for 200 people.
Did the men take turns in the kitchen?
There were always men in the helping in the kitchen.
Cooking or just cleaning?
In the cooking, as I tell you, there was 200 people to cook for. There was a lot of heavy stuff, and they did pretty much what it was, according to each one, what had to be done. Also, in the time of harvesting, you utilized all the talents, whatever they could do best. But as I say, the women were pretty much the way they wanted to be.
What do you mean by that?
Choosing their labor the way they wanted to. You see. Now, a dishwasher, for instance, there was a man that because I manufacture in the lusty shirt or something, you know, over there. Well, in the field, he would get his hands dirty or something like that. So a dishwasher, I was happy. You know, I ended up as a dishwasher. So this was an average people. It was